You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters Live. Welcome to Table Talk, a guide to the future of food and nutrition, and this episode is in association with Invest in Denmark. In these podcasts, we chat with visionaries from across the food industry to discover the ideas that will transform our food landscape. I'm Stefan Gates, I'm a food science writer, I'm a broadcaster, and I'm a gastronaut. Today we're talking sustainability, and we've discussed this loads before, but this time it's sustainability with a Danish twist. Whether we want to hit UN targets to end hunger by 2030 or climate change goals for 2050, all of these need a sustainable global food system. But if we're going to hit either of these goals, some dramatic change is going to be needed. Now, the food industry in Denmark has been getting a lot of attention recently for innovations and policies which are catching the eye of global investors, in particular because Denmark is considered to have one of the most sustainable food sectors in the world. So we've gathered together a fantastic panel to ask how that has been achieved and to ask what can we learn from Denmark to help develop a sustainable global food system. So my Danish supergroup is Ruben Dollerup Nielsen, Business Development Manager, Food at Food and Biocluster Denmark. Hello there, Ruben.
Hello. How are you, sir?
Very good. Very good. Good to have you. Camilla Lurker Odgaard, Director, Head of Sustainability and ESG at Christian Hansen. Hello there, Camilla.
Hello there. Happy to be here.
Fantastic. And Berit Chavez Azeri, Investment Manager, UK and Ireland at Invest in Denmark. Welcome, Berit.
Hello. Very happy to be here.
Excellent. Well, very good to have all of you. Before we start, can I just ask you to introduce yourself and explain your roles and what you're up to? So, Berit, can you tell us first?
I work as investment manager at Invest in Denmark, which is part of the Danish Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Briefly about Invest in Denmark and what we do, we help foreign companies that are looking to either invest, set up or expand their business or research activities in Denmark. I'm based in London at the Danish Embassy here, and my focus is on UK and Irish companies or investors interested in looking at opportunities in Denmark. And this can be everything from direct investments. So, for instance, a venture capital firm investing into a startup, or it can be helping a company set up a production facility or even find a research partner to set up activities in Denmark. And I cover several sectors, including food. Common across all sectors is that we prioritize supporting sustainable projects and knowledge-intensive investments where we believe Denmark has much to offer, and food is a very important sector in Denmark because we produce three times as much food as we consume.
I can imagine that with Brexit going on, you're very, very busy.
Yes, we are, definitely.
Okay, Ruben, you next. Can you explain what your role is and introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Ruben Dollerup Nielsen. I work for the Food and Biocluster Denmark. I've been working in the food cluster for about 8 years now. And before that, I was working 25 years in the food industry. My job is mainly to facilitate some networks and to produce some events and also to work in some of our programs.
Fantastic. Okay. And Camilla, can you introduce yourself and explain your role?
Absolutely. My name is Camilla, and I'm heading up Danish bioscience company Christian Hansen's sustainability and ESG team on a global level. We are a company that have been around the block for almost 150 years, been working with ingredients and natural ingredients, important to say, for the food and health industries for a very long time. And we're on a mission to transform the global food and health system and make it more sustainable and also make it future-proof for a low-carbon future.
Okay, well, let's start with the first question to you, Camilla. Corporate Knights, which is a Canadian research agency, recently produced a list of the 100 most sustainable corporations in the world. And there were three Danish companies in the top 10, including Christian Hansen, which took first place. Now, sustainability is clearly a priority for a lot of Danish companies, but has it always been a goal for Christian Hansen?
Yeah, so it's actually a super interesting story that I personally find very fascinating. So for Christian Hansen, it has actually been an evolution. Our company was founded by a man that was very visionary already back in the 1800 century. And he founded the company and already then explicitly stated a consciousness in the company around taking societal responsibility. So I would say that it was seeded already then. And then once he passed away, his children took over the company. And for many generations, they actually cultivated this consciousness around sustainability. And then in newer time, it has been strategically anchored by top management. But actually, I think that in 1949, I would mention that the son of our founder, he published a 4-page manifest, which we today refer to as our first sustainability position. And in this statement, he stressed that Chr. Hansen as a company must always live up to its responsibility as a good corporate citizen by developing employees, looking after the communities and the nature around us, and contribute positively to social progress. So I think that's fantastic, right? I mean, this is many, many, many decades before we as companies started talking about CSR and sustainability. So it's been slowly internalized in culture and purpose. And today it's obviously a very integrated part of both how we do product innovation and also how we run our business.
So 1949, so 70 years ago it kicked off.
Yeah.
That's fascinating, isn't it? Now, let's pull this apart a little bit, because to work out sustainability, data is enormously important. You know, you need to measure sustainability. But food supply chains, they're bewilderingly complex. There's so many different inputs and outputs, so many different types of impacts and processes. So it's an immensely difficult task. How do you go about measuring your impact?
So one thing that has been, I would say, a turning point for Chr. Hansen in terms of really, you know, lifting our sustainability efforts to the highest strategic level that we have been at and what we're still at, and which is also a great contributor to us earning that accolade from Corporate Knights, is actually our adoption of the UN Sustainable Development Goals. So back in, I'd say, 5 years ago, we were looking at these 17 goals and thinking that they were just like, we had this feeling that they would represent a fantastic opportunity for Chr. Hansen as a framework to how we could link our commercial side of the business with doing good on the sustainability front. So what we did was that we initiated a project where we spent almost half a year together with some good colleagues in our finance team, and we actually mapped all our 3,000 products towards all the SDGs. So by doing this analysis, you could say that our products chose which sustainable development goals that we as a company had the biggest impact on. Mm-hmm. And in this process, we could then identify that it would make most sense to us to work with goal number 2, number 3, and number 12. So then we know exactly which of our products contributes to these three goals. And by that, we can also come up with the number and showcase that 81% of our revenue directly contributes to the SDGs. And so to answer your question about how do we then, you know, set targets and really anchor it, we have chosen already 5 years ago when we started doing this SDG mapping to set concrete targets for each of them. So for example, if we look at the goal number 2, zero hunger, we have set a target that we want to reduce food waste on a global level by 2 million tons before 2025. So that is thinking that, you know, what gets measured gets done. So by setting very clear targets, we also ensure a focus in the organization to keep pushing to reach this.
So to be able to achieve that, I mean, you must have had to be very adaptable. I mean, change must have been very important to be able to achieve these goals. Have there been lots of occasions where you've had to shift the way that you work?
It's a good question, because I think we're all learning as organizations every day. And one of the things, now that I mentioned food waste before, so Chr. Hansen is a big global player. We have more than 1 billion people consuming our ingredients in a food or health product every day. So in the beginning, when we really set out to be agenda setting on food waste, we thought that we could, I guess, more quickly accelerate behavior and public debate than we then experienced. So we had really good traction on our food waste agenda. But what we have realized in the process since we start pushing this 5 years ago is that the more we team up in alliances with other industry players, such as Too Good To Go, or when we join a think tank of cross industry players, it's just so much more powerful. So that's definitely a learning and something that we are now fully committed to keep doing.
Okay, well, let's carry on talking about this partnership idea. So, Ruben, you work with a broad range of partners in the food sector. With sustainability being such a priority in the industry, can you tell us about some of the innovative projects or collaborations which have been real highlights for you?
Yeah, we have a project right now. If I translate into English, it'll be a green circular transition. It's a program for SME companies, or mainly for SME companies. And the program is designed to help them get started with the transition. I have an example. For example, a small factory called Skaru Ice Cream. They started out in the project, I think, out of pure idealism. But I spoke to the owner yesterday, and he told me that, just as an example, they had first of all an examination of the company, where you can say you produce a baseline as a 360 degree examination. And then these consultants who are in the project then help them to find out where is the most benefits, where can you really make a difference, so that you don't waste your money on something that doesn't really make a difference. But when he started out, he could, in 13 hours, he could produce 2,000 cups of ice cream. After going through this project, he can now, in 4 hours, produce 4,000 cups of ice cream. And he has reduced his use of electricity by 65%. But moreover, I can also say that he has now increased his capacity in one shift to 18,000 cups. Other benefits are, of course, that in the beginning they were working 13 hours to produce the 2,000 cups. Now they can do it in 8 hours. So they use less hours. They also produce a better quality. And they can have a better product development, simply because they can produce products that they couldn't do before. And they also have a better growth perspective, because first of all, they can produce by less cost, but also that they now have a higher capacity. They use less water, and they use less soap and so on for cleaning the production facility.
Okay, now Berit, in your role with helping foreign companies to invest or to set up or expand businesses or research activities in Denmark, what trends and what types of investments have you seen helping to drive the sustainability agenda within the food sector in Denmark?
So like everywhere on the planet, we've felt the impact of COVID-19. We've seen a clear trend towards nearshoring. So essentially companies seeking to bring food production closer to where the food is being consumed. And obviously being based in the UK, Brexit has also increased both the costs and complexity related to exporting goods, especially perishable products like food, from the UK to the EU. And here I'm, of course, thinking about tariffs, rules of origin and so forth. So we've had more discussions with companies about potentially setting up a parallel structure or a second production facility in Denmark to access the EU market. And it's in particular companies who focus on sustainability that are finding Denmark to be a compelling location. And that's largely because of the expertise and types of solutions that already exist here when it comes to making production more sustainable. And it applies across the value chain. So it can be solutions that help decrease water usage, increase automation, or help valorize side streams, essentially incorporating circular economy thinking to find ways to use one company's waste product as a resource or input in your production. And one example is a grain. They upcycle spent grains from breweries that would otherwise have gone to waste, and they've actually turned them into nutritious food products. Another great example is a company called Bigadan. They have converted food waste from local farmers and food producers into biogas. Today, I think they meet the energy needs of approximately 4,000 Danish households. So a nice incorporation of sustainable thinking there. And then, of course, there are basic yet quite essential elements. In Denmark, you have access to renewable energy sources. This is mainly from wind, and it's also at a very low price, considering that we actually have the lowest electricity prices in Europe for non-household customers. And then in more general terms, we also have a very strong cluster of expertise when it comes to food ingredients. It's perhaps not a very well-known fact, but Denmark is home to some very established large international food ingredients companies, such as Christian Hansen. And these actually have a combined 14% market share of the global food ingredients market. So it's quite significant. Novozymes, which is another of the very large and sustainable food ingredient companies in Denmark, they have developed an enzyme that makes it possible to produce margarine with all the desired qualities while avoiding trans fats altogether. And In addition to eliminating the trans fats, this special enzyme that they've developed actually also removes needs for chemical washing and other post-bleaching processes, so there's no wastewater. And therefore, they also save energy and water in the manufacturing process. And then as a sort of last trend I like to mention as well is this overall trend towards what I like to refer to as good for you and good for the planet alternatives. So plant-based foods, free from categories, just plain healthier foods with less added sugar, salt and fats. And here we really see that food ingredient companies play a key role. And I'm referring to everything from developing natural colorings, ingredients to help create the right taste or texture, and even for increasing shelf life without using artificial preservatives to help reduce food waste, for example. So partnerships and research collaborations for product development is something that we're focusing on and that we're seeing increased potential for. A lot of innovation happening in that space to develop more sustainable solutions.
And it just goes to show also that sustainability has many different colours, that there are lots of different aspects to it as well, which I think is also quite an exciting part of it as well, rather than a complication. Now, on this podcast, one of the things that we look at in depth and we're looking at the moment is ag tech, at areas of the world where technology and innovation is really blossoming. And you can check out the editions on our website, foodmatterslive.com. But one common thread in those discussions is the role of government. Now, and this is a tricky one, lots of people think that it can be a great intervention, and lots of people say, well, it's not really quite right. But looking at that from a top-level perspective, what do you think that the role of government is or should be? How can they create the right framework to promote sustainability? Camilla, do you have an opinion on this?
I absolutely have an opinion on that. So in my world, the governments can play a huge role in actually speeding up this green transition. So for us to operate effectively and get market access as corporate publicly listed companies, we're very dependent on, of course, the approval of our products. And let me give you an example. So for example, in the EU, we have the Farm to Fork strategy, where it has been set out by the EU Commission that we need to reduce the use of chemical pesticides by 50% within 10 years. So that's quite exciting for us because we're very much looking into how can we farm significantly more sustainable. And we have natural plant protective products that can achieve a yield that is as good as the chemical alternatives. So that's super exciting. But at the moment, we cannot sell them in the EU because approval processes take 5 to 8 years. So that is just simply a paradox, right? Because it really means that we will have to achieve everything within the last 2 years before 2030 hits, whereas we could have these products on the market now. In comparison, in South America and in the US, where we sell these products, approval processes are 1 to 2 years. So by giving the right framework conditions, governments can really help accelerate the green transition. And I would mention, I think we're almost at a stage where we desperately need to fast track green solutions through the system if we want to achieve these goals and really fight climate change in a pace as it should be done.
And do you feel that government is aware of this? Are they listening to these requirements and understand the urgency?
Yeah, so I can speak for Denmark. I think definitely that the politicians here in my country, they totally understand this focus. But it's also a lot of EU law that has to go through. So it's not enough for us to just have the Danish politicians on board. We also need the whole machinery in Brussels to also support this.
Yeah.
But this is one of the areas where we're also teaming up in a bioscience alliance where Novozymes, as Beat mentioned before, have also joined, where we are lobbying together to really showcase the potential of fast-tracking these approvals of green agricultural solutions to the market now.
And Ruben, do you agree that government can help to create the framework to promote sustainability?
Yeah, totally. I have also an example of a business in Denmark called Lyras. They have now made a new technology for pasteurization, and they can save energy of 90% or more, and also they can enable you to use 60% less water. That means that if all the dairies in Denmark took up this technology, there will be water enough for 45 million people. So that's a technology. But when they have to have an approval, then the problem is that the law is based on old technology for pasteurization.
Mm.
So it takes time to have an approval for this technology, which of course will slow down the process.
And Barrett, from your point of view, is government helping to create a sort of an investable framework around sustainability?
Well, I certainly hope so. That is at least the goal. In summer of 2019, the Danish government put into law a very ambitious climate action target of 70% reductions in CO2 emissions by 2030. And other countries have thankfully also committed to reaching similar targets. But I think the Danish government did something quite unique after setting the target. They announced 13 climate partnerships across a range of different industries, including food production and agriculture, also waste, water and circular economy, land, transport, logistics, life sciences and biotech and so forth. And each of these working groups was tasked basically with coming up with the how. So a concrete set of recommendations on how to meet the 70% emissions reduction goal. Food Production Agriculture Working Group came back with 24 recommendations for how the sector would meet the emissions reductions goal by 2030. So it's truly been a collaborative and inclusive process where you've seen industry and businesses that have been involved in developing the plan of action to meet quite ambitious yet attainable sustainability goals.
Okay. Now, Camilla, we're sort of talking sort of theoretically and talking about regulation and sort of large-scale issues, but let's put this into practice now. How do you engage with other companies in Denmark to drive forward a sustainability agenda? Can you talk a little bit about collaborations?
Yeah, would happy to talk a little bit about that. So what we are doing is that we're just doing the classical way, where we have a lot of academic partnerships. We have more than 300 academic partnerships on a global scale. And in Denmark, we're, of course, in close collaboration with all the leading universities. But what we also are really putting a lot of emphasis around these days is also the need to engage in more unconventional partnerships. So, for example, here in Copenhagen, where we are placed, we have a food scene that is quite extraordinary with a lot of innovation. The Nordic food revolution started here. And so we're teaming up these days, especially within plant-based food, which is a category that we really are seeing gaining speed these days, both because consumers have a climate consideration and also a health concern. So they want to eat more plant-based. And here we have, for example, a partnership with an ex-Michelin chef from Noma, who used to head up their fermentation lab. So this guy, a brilliant guy called David Silber, we're now working with him to get the taste and texture right in plant-based products. And that's simply because if we want to see plant-based food go mainstream, we have to get to a stage where they are as good tasting as the traditional food products that we love. And Christian Hansen is an expert on microbial science and fermentation, where so for us teaming up with a Michelin chef, or we also have another partnership coming up with some other fine dining restaurants, you know, they are just so good in taste. So we can combine our competences and that's an unconventional partnership. And I believe you will see much more of those.
Excellent. Okay. And what about public and private partnerships? Maybe, Barrett, you can talk a little bit about this. Can these partnerships help to increase a focus on sustainability, do you think?
Yes, they help through funding and increased collaboration. And we have some really great examples. For instance, DRIP, which is a public-private partnership with the Danish company Carlsberg, to develop more sustainable water technologies. Essentially, Carlsberg and a Danish public-private partnership for resource and water-efficient industrial production. They came together to reduce water waste. And recently, Carlsberg opened their first total water recycling plant, where the brewery will recycle 90% of all processed water, all while also cutting energy consumption by 10%. So this DRIP partnership has essentially helped Carlsberg tap into the combined knowledge of academic institutions and technology partners to find the right partners to develop this solution together. We have also examples of, for example, Christian Hansen and the University of Copenhagen. They together developed a specific lactic acid bacteria that can eliminate listeria, so basically reduce the need for antibiotics, which is another, I think, big issue when you talk about sustainability and look at health. We have other examples such as biorefined grass protein to use in feedstock, which was a pilot project in collaboration with our university in Aarhus. So countless examples of very successful outcomes from these types of partnerships, I'd say.
Yeah. And Ruben, do you find that public-private partnerships are important to help reduce environmental impact in Denmark?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I think it's an old Danish tradition in the cooperatives that working together, first of all in the industry, but also with government. We need, of course, the support, the financial support from the government to have some of those projects to motivate companies to make the change, but also to guide them how to make the change. And of course, in the food cluster, we have a lot of members. Christian Hansen is one of them. And we also have a lot of the Danish universities as members. And for us, it's very important to bring the businesses together with the universities.
And Berit, can you give us some examples of some green policy initiatives that have had a direct effect on food and sustainability?
Yeah, I have countless examples. For instance, our ambitious organic policies. So Denmark was actually the first country in the world to introduce rules for organic production, to develop sort of national organic standards, and to launch an organic label. We were also the first in the world to introduce a target of 60% organic products in public sector kitchens. And all of this has actually resulted in Denmark now having the highest market share of organic products in the world. It's more than 12% of the market, and it continues to grow. And in certain food categories, such as dairy, it is up at around 30% of the consumption that is already organic. So that's been very much driven by organic policies, and the Danish Agriculture and Food Council, they estimate that 20% of the Danish land area is now used only for organic farming. Mm-hmm. Very recently, we've also seen sort of the latest guidance for sustainable healthy diets. This was an effort to educate and empower consumers to make better and more informed choices. Here we had the Danish Veterinary and Food Administration publish the Good for You and Good for the Planet guidance, where you can look up the carbon footprint of different food groups. So it's really meant to help guide consumers not only on how to eat healthier, but also on how to eat more climate friendly.
Now, let's look at the flip side of this. Whenever you talk about sustainability, we start talking about greenwashing and whether people are really doing something that makes a change or whether it just looks that way. And, you know, so it's something that a lot of companies and a lot of governments get accused of. Have you got any examples of greenwashing that particularly frustrate you?
I would more like to say in general, sometimes when people claim that they are sustainable, it's really just the packaging, almost just sometimes the color of the packaging that they've changed. That frustrates me a little bit because that will harm all the businesses that really do a big effort in this area. But I think most of the companies nowadays, they are very sincere when they work with sustainability. Also because they can see it's good for the business. It's what the end users demand. So that's also what they want to deliver.
Okay, now, Camilla, putting all this into action, how do we promote all these different ideas like circular thinking and reducing damaging emissions, energy use and food waste from a company perspective?
Yeah, I would say, I actually think that food waste is probably one of the easiest way that we as consumers can really make a difference if we want to act on climate change. So if we look to the reports from the UN, we can see that around 1/3 of all food goes to waste. And at the same time, if you look at the total greenhouse gas emissions that are happening on this planet, the food and agriculture industries account for 1/3. So we are a significant contributor in the food sector. But at the same time, we know that around 10% of the greenhouse gases are actually associated with food that was never consumed. So I think these facts kind of, you know, both demonstrate the magnitude of the problem and also the urgent need to really rethink our system and the food system that we have established. So in dairy, for example, where we have a role to play among other industries, it's estimated that 17% of yogurt in Europe is wasted. And 81% of that is actually related to the date of expiration. So something like labeling our products differently, something that we have done successfully in Denmark by some brands, where you, instead of putting the expiration date on, we will put on an also good after instead. Because that just means a lot in order to really change the habits of consumers.
Yeah, that's a really, really important shift, isn't it? And it's a small thing, but could make a huge impact as well.
Exactly, yeah. And at the same time, I mean, we have also these good bacterial cultures that are lactic acid bacteria, where we can actually, so these are, you know, nature's own way. When we ferment, we can prevent food from spoiling. And with some of our cultures, we can prolong shelf life and help the producers keep the food fresh and safe for longer, because we can inhibit the development of yeast and mold. And so when you add these cultures to food, you would also be able to move either the expiration date in an all-natural way, so it's not because there's a chemical preservative in the product, or you can at the same time work as a food producer by doing this often good after. And also just teaching people to smell the product, right? So when you open your yogurt or your sour cream, I mean, do what our ancestors would have done when we didn't have all this technology. And if the milk smells good, it's probably good enough.
I love the idea of the bacterial cultures, that sort of food actively looking after itself and controlling itself. It's brilliant. And what do you feel that consumers can do to put pressure on corporates or industry to develop more sustainable food products? What sort of things does a company like yours actually respond to in terms of consumer pressure?
Yeah, so we try to stay awake all the time and listen to consumers and also do we engage with our customers around this. We see this as something that we need to solve across the value chain. Food waste accounts it's an unbearable amount of waste that is happening every day, and the problem only seems bigger thinking about the fact that we'll be 2 billion more people on this planet in 2050. So engaging both on the supplier side and with our customers, I really believe that can move something like this forward.
Excellent. Okay. Now, one last question for everyone, and maybe we'll start with you, Berit. What can other countries learn from what Denmark has done and from what Denmark has learned itself?
I would say our way of collaborating. So this focus on public-private partnerships. We have a very strong tradition for collaborating between public authorities, universities, and research institutions. Sort of everyone coming together to develop and agree on ambitious yet attainable standards. And once these are reached, sort of keep setting the bar higher and higher. We're also known for transparency and high level of trust in society. And that has a very positive effect on collaboration also between companies. We also have a strong ecosystem. So developing an ecosystem, I think, is also something other countries could put more efforts into. We have quite a cluster of well-developed research and development capabilities. And then last but not least, our really strong focus on sustainability. So trying to think that into everything we do. And we have, I think, a lot of numbers that speak to sort of the success of these different elements. We had, for example, a goal to reduce food waste. There was a very successful partnership between food cluster, retailers, consumer organizations, and public authorities, where over a five-year period, they managed to reduce food waste by 25%, which is quite significant. Mm-hmm. And on the back of that, we actually also have a lot of interesting companies that have been created as a result. For example, Too Good To Go, which is an app that helps reduce food waste from retail, where consumers can buy food at a discounted price. And that food would have otherwise just been thrown away or gone to waste. Another example is Eat Grim, which means ugly in Danish. They've actually started making food boxes with what they call ugly by nature or surplus organic fruit and veg that don't fit what the aesthetic standards that you would find in retail. So that doesn't go to waste.
Yeah. Okay. Same question to you then, Ruben. What can other countries learn from Denmark with regard to promoting sustainability?
Yeah, I was just about to say the same as Barry started out saying, that cooperation between, or collaboration between the companies, because, you know, you cannot do it all by yourself. It's a too long way to go. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid to share your experiences. I think that that's definitely the most important thing. And then be open and be 100% committed to work with the sustainability. The Danish professor, Steen Hillebrand, he's traveled the world giving speeches about sustainability. And he said, everybody needs to have sustainability into their strategy. If you don't have it, you might not be here in 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Sort of dramatic words, but it's absolutely true. Camilla, lastly from you, what do you think other countries can learn from Denmark's approach?
Yeah, so I can, of course, only also support what has just been said. I think it's important if other countries look to Denmark. I think Danish companies are having a leading position in sustainability, which is a great contributor to our local economy here. And I think that's a reason enough, right, to be inspired by the fact that going green is actually a commercial opportunity. It creates more jobs because there's a demand for this. And as sustainability becomes a hygiene factor for the consumers, I really believe that the companies that will transition themselves and going green will be the winners of tomorrow. So I think that the commercial opportunity in this is a strong argument for other governments and nations to look to Denmark. Yeah. And then I would say one thing that is personally very important for me is also because sustainability is becoming just part of business, right? It's no longer seen as something that we add in a corporate report. If you really mean this, it's part of your strategy, it's part of your purpose, your recruitment strategies. So I think one thing that's so vital, and I think that we have done very well here in Denmark, given this profound focus on the agenda, is that faculties all across universities has started for the past years to incorporate sustainability in their curriculum for the students. So not only if you study environmental science or if you have your major is in, you know, sustainable reporting from a business school, but basically everyone needs to learn this, because in the future I believe that climate mindset or sustainability skills will be applicable in any career. We need people in all corners of the organization to make the right decisions, no matter if they're number crunchers in finance, if they're in sourcing, if they work at the canteen and they care about food waste. Everyone can make a difference here. And we need to see the next generations already when they're in school.
I think that's absolutely true, isn't it? You know, it's no longer a novel idea to be part of a company's essential kind of makeup. It needs to be normalized and embedded in everything we do. So, Berit, if we have any companies that are interested in partnerships or working in Denmark, how would they get in touch with you? How would they get started?
Yes, please get in touch. You can find our contact details on investindk.com, and we would be very happy to help you look at opportunities in Denmark.
Well, thank you so much, all of you. Ruben Dollerup Nielsen, Camilla Lurker Odgaard, and Berit Chavez Azeri. Thank you all so much for talking to me. You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast brought to you by Food Matters, and this episode is in association with Invest in Denmark. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from food standards to the ag tech revolution. Recent highlights include editions on intermittent fasting and insect protein, which I guess could go together quite well. Follow us to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatterslive.com. Thank you so much for listening.